Trigger warning. This podcast addresses deeply rooted and challenging topics. It is written for open-minded individuals who are seeking insight and alternative perspectives on the complex histories of cults and their leaders. Many cults are destructive, and some of the content presented here may be emotionally triggering. This podcast is not recommended for young people, as some content may be inappropriate. Listener discretion advised. Welcome to Cult Following.
Open Bibles rest on a wooden altar next to percussion instruments. In the room where a religious sect allegedly forced a pregnant woman and five of her children to walk through fire in this remote Panamanian hamlet. The makeshift sanctuary is littered with muddy boots and scorched clothing belonging to a cult whose indigenous members profess to be anointed by God to sacrifice non-believers, even if the heretics were members of their own families. Seven villagers were slain by the cult on January 13, 2020, while 15 more were rescued the next day by police who found them bound and beaten in the temple. Several more villagers escaped with burns. This is the New Light of God cult on today's episode of Cult Following. And with me is Dr. Katie, as always.
Hello, hello.
So, what do you think about this one? How's my little teaser for this one?
Very good. It really sets the tone. It sets the mood. I always come in like ready to go, and then we get into it, and I'm like, oh yeah,
this is depressing.
We're talking about cults. Yeah, it really sets the scene very well.
You know, this was
up for the rest of the episode today.
This was a recent addition to what we were going to do this season, because this is actually a recent destructive cult happening in just 2020. I mean, the most recent things I think people have been talking about has been the Nexium cult. That's been in the news for 2 years now. But this was one that just kind of came out of nowhere that I caught a news story for. And I called you and I said, we've got to cover this one because it's a fascinating one that's happened in another part of the world. And I just wanted to maybe do a short episode to talk about this, because even today, people are still really deciphering what happened there and what the repercussions of this will be.
Yeah, very interesting. And so, you know, we'll get into the basics, but especially with everything that happened last year, you know, what a time to also be involved in a cult.
Yeah, for sure. So what do we know about this cult, Dr. Katie?
So the cult was set up in a remote region of Panama in the indigenous area of Alto Terron. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but it sounds good.
I think
good.
You got it right.
With a population of around 300. Most were related to each other. The remote region has no police, no electricity, no healthcare facilities. The New Light of God cult, which had operated in the village for about 3 months, changed after a member had a vision, telling the lay preachers they had been anointed to exterminate unbelievers. One of the rituals involved being stripped nude and forced to walk across hot coals. Other rituals involved being beaten with Bibles and machetes. Many believe that the church's rituals were exorcism rituals.
Wow. So how did the authorities find out what happened?
Well, so this is where the story gets really interesting. So a six-year-old boy actually escaped from the cult and reached his father, who then contacted the district leader, who then reached the police. Just to notify the police alone, took a one-hour hike and a two-hour canoe trip. That's how isolated this place was.
Wow.
Yeah. So police arrived 3 days after the rituals and were able to rescue 15 people still held by the cult. When police arrived, there was a naked person, a woman, quote unquote, inside the building. where investigators found machetes, knives, and a ritually sacrificed goat. Another 14 people were tied and beaten in a stable that was used as a church. The bodies of 7 individuals were recovered from a mass grave. And among the murdered were a 9-year-old girl, a 33-year-old pregnant woman, and her 5 children. All had been beaten, burned, and dismembered.
Oh, this is truly tragic. Wow.
Very tragic.
Unbelievable. The police stated that the multi-day ritual was apparently meant to purify sin from the community. And all of these rites were aimed at killing members of the village if they did not repent their sins. 10 cult members were arrested and charged with murder and kidnapping, including Mario Gonzalez, who is an evangelical preacher and the leader of the New Light of God. So at least someone's been brought to justice with this. In response to the deaths linked to the New Light of God cult, the Panamanian government has proposed new legislation aimed at criminalizing cult activity. The new rules are intended to prevent false leaders of religious sects from abusing their congregations. And the legislation, however, contains uncertain language that introduces a distinction between a genuine religious order and a group that is pretending to be religious. And the broad scope of the legislation may have consequences for minority faiths and new religious movements within the Central American nation, as a similar legislation has done in other countries.
Yeah, so what do you think about this? What do you think about this new legislation and its potential impact?
Yeah. You know, this is always a slippery slope in general. And with me, I'm an expert in comparative religious study, and I have almost made it my life's work to study spirituality and religions all over the world. And certainly part of this involves politics that has to happen. You know, in the United States here, we're protected in our Bill of Rights for our practice of religion. And that, you know, that includes cults in a way. If a cult goes through the right channels to establish themselves as the proper organization, they have many, many protections. In fact, we've talked about, you know, Nexium, and it's a cult we're going to get to later in the season. But, you know, a lot of the problems that Keith Raniere faced could have maybe not been there had he actually organized Nexium as a religious organization. Instead, he was, you know, criminally applicable in a way to the things that went on there. So cults and religions, organized religions, spiritualities of all types have protections. So in some places, these protections were eroded. And many times it's because of the political structures of nations. Like we know with communism. Communism did not like religion. They did not want that. Mm-hmm. And so you see this in different places. But this in particular, this legislation is consistent with a broad and growing anti-cult movement worldwide. Last year, the United States Commission on International Religious Freedom released its annual report, expanding its list of countries that they designate as being of particular concern for cults, and those that should be added to kind of a special watch list. And Panama was not among them, which is crazy because this was going on, you know?
Yeah, that is very, very interesting that they did not include them. So it may seem odd that there's a U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, but it was set up as an independent bipartisan federal government entity established by the U.S. Congress to monitor, analyze, and report on threats to religious freedom abroad.
Don't we have about a commission for everything these days?
Right.
So essentially, right. You know, this is the U.S. trying to police the world of what's considered a religion or religious freedom or a cult or anything, right?
Yes. I think we do really like to, you know, stick our hands into all of the honeypots sometimes.
The commission kind of polices how anti-cult movements and legislation can potentially be used to suppress religious liberties, such as the Russian government's ban on the Jehovah's Witnesses in April of 2017. But the reverse is also very dangerous by how powerful established religions and denominations can use this anti-cult movement to suppress new religious movements. So do you see the gray area here with this, Dr. Katie?
I definitely do. I mean, I feel like, I just think this would be such a hard thing to do and undertake, because there's so much gray area. And so I can see how this could be a problem for people trying to start new, healthy, religious, non-destructive religious movements, right? If you haven't listened to our introductory podcast episode, it's really helpful to listen to that because we talk a lot about that. This is really related to that, I would say. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, when you get into religious sects, it gets tricky because even if you look at like Waco, which we're covering this season, you get into the Branch Davidians, and these are, you know, minor sects of larger organized religions. So you get this in Christianity a lot. You get really far out there thinkers that are evangelizing for something that's a very specific part of the Bible, or a very specific take on it, or maybe your minister becomes bigger than the church in a way, which you see in a lot of these mega churches. It's easy to see how these things can spring up, even in things as simple as Christianity. And there really hasn't been any international religious cooperation that's gone on. If the Catholics had their way, they would be the dominant form of Christianity. And if the Christians had their way, there would be no Hinduism, and there would be no Buddhist philosophy. They would spread around the world because that's historically what these religions have done. So if they're already against other big religions that are on par with them, imagine what they want to do to squash the little guy. And every once in a while, you do get a great new take on something from a kind of new spiritual leader. And I think these things may not have a chance to grow. In this particular case, this went terribly bad. You know, something happened to this man. Maybe he had the jungle sweats and he had a bad dream and he decided, I need to cleanse everyone or kill everyone.
Right. And this is why it's so hard, because it could be, you know, maybe nothing too horribly wrong was happening prior, and then one event occurs, one thing happens, and it flips, right? And then it becomes destructive and it becomes something completely different. Yeah. And so how do you even keep track of that? You know, how I just think that this seems almost like an impossible task.
For sure.
So this pattern has been seen before. And the Order of the Solar Temple is a cult that combines evangelical Christianity with occult Freemasonry. After a number of murder suicides by order members during the mid-1990s in Quebec, France, and Switzerland, several European nations passed anti-cult legislation. So the order has made a comeback since then. But scholars continue to warn that the laws protecting against mental manipulation by cults could easily turn against legitimate minority faiths.
And this is the topic of our next episode of Cult Following, and that is the Order of the Solar Temple.
Yes, which should be, again, a highly intriguing to dive into. Especially given the fact that it's made a comeback.
Yeah, for sure. And after, you know, after these cults generally get shut down, you don't usually see their reemergence. And the Order of the Solar Temple has come back. So I think it'll be interesting for people that tune in for our next podcast as to whether the cult has made any fundamental changes and how they operate now as opposed to how it was before. But what we saw with this Panamanian cult, the New Light of God, this was definitely a destructive cult. It may not have started that way, but it unfortunately did, ultimately become that. And anytime people are killed in these types of ways, it's terribly tragic and it's awful. And I think what I am just really curious about, and kind of my final thoughts with this, is why we see these types of churches spring up in such faraway areas. Like, how do you go from a 2-hour canoe ride, an hour hike, and set up camp to be your new ministry? Like, this is just insane to me to think about what was this person thinking when they decided to go out and bring religion to these indigenous peoples. You know, is that the purpose of it? Is that the purpose of the missionary work, to go out to remote areas to bring religion, and you go that far away? Like, this is just crazy to me how this all happened.
Right. And then, you know, what was going on with everyone else when this person flipped this, the switch, so to speak, and decided that killing people needed to become part of this, or sacrifice needed to become a part of this, an important integral part of this? Were people standing by? Were they too afraid to do anything? Or were they kind of under the same idea or same mindset that this is what we need to do? And how did it get there? Again, this is such a new cult, and we don't have a ton of information about it. So this is all just kind of me thinking and speculating about how this came about.
For those of you out there that want to know a little more, there are some good interviews from people that survived that are out there on the internet. So if you do some searches, you'll find interviews with people that were involved in this. But, you know, one of the cults we'll cover this season is, Jonestown, the Jim Jones ministry. And, there was definitely a specific reason that Jim Jones wanted to leave the country and set up far, far away. But what happened to Jim Jones after he got out in the jungle may be a completely other story. And that's what I think it's interesting. You know, we don't know where necessarily this, this minister came from when he went to set this up, if he was from a big city or a small town or another country altogether. We don't know much about him. We know that Jim Jones was a minister in Indianapolis, Indiana. But at the end, it still, both cults ended with a lot of people dead. And it's unfortunate. So to wonder if getting out in those secluded, isolated areas, and you have a lot of people that you have to be accountable for, if that's too much, to know who broke who here.
Right. And gosh, the resilience of that boy to trek that far and, you know, get help for himself and these people. Amazing.
And the father wasn't apparently part of the church, or would have maybe been there.
Right. That would be an interesting rabbit hole to go down too.
I often wonder, you know, how these parishioners of something like this would follow through with this walking on coals, or, you know, how they can be subjected to being beaten. You know, do they just close up? Is it just a traumatic experience where their body shuts down and they can't defend themselves, or they think they shouldn't defend themselves, or why weren't they running? I mean, someone somewhere saw the first person get killed. There were clearly, you know, numbers. There were clearly more members of the church than there were people who were doing the beatings with the Bibles. Like, how do those people stay there? Is there something happening to them when they're in the middle of this experience, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when we think about reactions to traumatic or distressing events, you know, we think about that fight or flight response. And another response that people don't always talk about as much is the freeze response. And so that is actually something that happens sometimes during a traumatic event. Instead of reacting by running or by trying to fight back, so to speak, you might instead end up just kind of freezing in place and almost, you know, dissociating in some way, not able to really think or move or react at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a possibility.
And I think that's probably what a lot of it might have been, a dissociation in a way, because there were certainly more members of the church than there were people that were administering the ceremony. And I just wonder, how can you not get control in that situation when you're the majority of it? You know, a lot of people wound up being, you know, tied up in the barn, which was doubling as the church. So very odd and very tragic. And I unfortunately don't think this is the last time we're going to see this.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I'll be interested to kind of keep an eye out on this storyline and see what other information we get from it moving forward.
When the world gets nuts, you know, people will resort to things they didn't think they would resort to. And during COVID, I think we saw that a lot. I had many interviews on my Quest podcast discussing whether people are getting closer to spirituality while being sequestered in their homes and not able to go anywhere. And you wonder what people will reach toward when they don't see a lot of hope. You know, you've lost your job because of COVID and you don't have much money. You can't pay your rent and, you know, you're alone and you don't even have an animal and, you know, you can't date because no one can get near each other. Like,
Right. We
really were seeing the worst of the worst things that could possibly be happening in our lifetime.
Definitely.
Aside from going to war or, you know, something terribly tragic happening to a family member, whatnot. I mean, we really were put in a terribly, you know, deep emotional trench through all this. I think everyone started to reflect on their life differently.
Yes. And I had read a little bit about this as well. And it seems that this is a pattern when there's kind of a big global shared trauma or experience like this, it seems that there's a trend towards, you know, spirituality in many different forms, from, you know, seeking out psychics or tarot card readings or that type of spirituality to, you know, religion and that kind of thing as well. And I'm hoping that people also have been checking in, especially now that we're kind of seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, checking in on their mental health and also talking to people like me, I hope, and you know, thinking about reaching out to mental health professionals as needed, because like you said, this is really, you know, on a broad scale and on an individual personal scale, a very heavy past year and a half or so with the pandemic.
Yeah. There's also other things too that I think are fascinating. I'll just interject real quick before we close the podcast up, but you know, and I've had this discussion with priests, all different types of people that minister. And it's the idea that, you know, sometimes prayer is the last refuge of a scoundrel. And sometimes people, they don't attend church. They don't necessarily, their beliefs in God, they're unsure about, but when things get bad, they'll pray. And here's mm-hmm. the rub with all this. And that is sometimes things get grim in your home and you pray and you don't get what you ask for in your prayers. And in some cases, it actually drives people away from organized religion, because it's like, you know, here COVID hit and I lost my job as a waiter and I haven't been able to pay my rent in 3 months and my credit's getting bad because I can't make my, you know, no one's working with me on anything and I'm alone and I can't go out and I can't, you know, I'm like freaking out and I pray and I need some solution. I need something to happen for me and it doesn't happen. And you say, I'm done with the Catholic Church. And then you look for something else to fill that gap. And that's where people find their ways to cults and find their ways to communes and find their ways to other things. And, and we're still dealing with these, like people think this is over now, but this is not over. In fact, this is
not quite yet.
This is on such a slim margin that we could slip back into this so quickly, especially if we get some variant on COVID that we can't stop. We're all back in our houses in 3 months, people. It's going to happen. and that could happen. It's a razor thin margin here of that we could slip back into this. And a lot of, you know, there were a lot of laws passed and things that had to happen. So you couldn't be evicted from your apartment if you couldn't pay rent, and the utilities were working with you for the first time you know, your phone bill, they would say, hey, don't worry about it. If you can't pay this month, we can let it slide. People were actually being kind to Americans, you know, to help remedy this a little bit. But the thing was that it wasn't, you still had to pay your cell phone bill. You just didn't have to pay it for a couple months. And yeah, you don't have to pay your rent right now because we can't legally evict you during this pandemic. But eventually you have to pay what you owe. So now people are stuck with bills that are in the thousands of dollars. And I should make paraphrase this too, that the credit card companies did not offer such deals with people. You still had to pay your 21% interest on your credit card. And that was non-negotiable. And a lot of people couldn't do that. And their credit's ruined now because of it. And so there's still a lot of after effects to this. And there's a lot of people collecting unemployment. There's still a lot of places that aren't open. They still don't know how many restaurants and bars and things just won't reopen that are just kind of shuttered right now. And you don't know if that place in the mall is going to reopen or not, period. It might just be gone. Yeah. So people will be writing about this, not only the physical, but the mental effects of this pandemic for years to come.
Oh, definitely.
And when you're put in a bad spot, like we know from our previous episode of the Manson cult, we saw lots of these people out on the street for one reason or another. And this is what happens. And when you're out on the street, you're going to, you know, find somewhere you're going to fit. You're either going to be in a homeless shelter or crash on someone's couch, or you're going to find a cult that's going to invite you in.
Yeah. And I'll be interested to see if just in general, after this, you know, talking about these repercussions that we're going to see for years, if losing some of these basic needs like housing is going and, you know, and jobs and that kind of thing, if that might lead to more people living in kind of a communal style situation, or, you know, groups of people living together that maybe wouldn't have beforehand.
I tell you, I'm like really fascinated by the van life culture. And I follow these van lifers all the time on social media, people that have just given up living the normal way. And they've got these like $80,000 custom Mercedes vans with kitchens in them and showers. And I'm like, I want one of these so bad. And they just drive wherever they want to drive and live where they want to live. And, mm-hmm. you know, there is a different kind of van culture that are like really kind of crappy vans and people that are essentially homeless living in their cars. And then there's this new way of van life. And there's like young single 20 somethings that are doing this, living this life. And it's become really, really in vogue to do this, to live like this. But I stress van life culture is what it's called. And what do we know? Cult is short for culture. And right. It's interesting because they're kind of nomads, but yet they all hashtag van life. They all meet up. They'll find some spot in the desert where 26 of these people will all show up in their vans. And it's kind of a new hippie lifestyle. And it's very fascinating to me. And I wonder where things like this are going to go, particularly when things get tighter and more people are living in their cars and their SUVs and adopting this kind of nomadic culture. And because the world has now created itself to be virtual, so many of these people are able to do their digital editing from their car or fly their drones or do their photography or whatever it is they do from a distance. There's one girl that I follow that does yoga, and she goes out to these beautiful desert locations and she does yoga in the desert and she Zooms it and she has people that pay for it.
Yeah.
And then there's people that just exist as kind of people that are just popular to follow in van life anyways. And they've got so many followers, they just make their money from social media just because they're sort of influencers in a way. So they're getting all this free stuff and all this money from all the views, and that's how they're able to sustain. And
the cult of influencer.
Yeah. And the pandemic showed us, you know, the pandemic actually advanced the internet by about 5 years. If the pandemic hadn't happened, it would take us 5 more years to get to where we're at now on things. And what I mean by that is that so much stuff had to be bought virtually online now, and people having things delivered straight to their homes, that you realize you don't have to go to the gym now, and that you can have a Peloton treadmill, and you can, And if Peloton's listening to this and they want to send us a Peloton treadmill, by all means, they should send us one for promoting their product on our podcast or two. Because now you can be on the treadmill or on a bike or on whatever, and you have a screen in front of you and you're with a class. And who would have thought that we would be able to do this? Like that company, Zoom, which we use to make this podcast, I didn't even know what these companies were before the pandemic.
Yeah. And I mean, same with healthcare and the way that I see clients occasionally, you know, over the computer. I mean, yeah.
It's apps.
All safe, but it's still, everything has become much more virtual.
Well, there's apps you download now just to see a regular doctor. And yeah. you pull up the app and it's not necessarily like mental health, like what you do, but like I can get on there and I can say, you know, my elbow's hurt and this is what's happening. And like, mm-hmm. and they'll work with me right over a video call. Like it's crazy how much the world changed because of this. And we realize we don't need space. So people can work from their home, do the same job they did in office in their home now. And this may not change. So I think all these things really kind of factor into where we're going to go in the future. And kind of the cult of work and the cult of socializing, the cult of all this stuff is also different now.
Yeah, definitely.
And church services from home, you know, is like the mega churches, you could often find those churches on television with their Sunday service. But once, you know, COVID hit and the churches closed down, it became, you know, a virtual mass in a different way. And these smaller churches had to figure out how to meet their congregation. And and it all became Zoom meetings and Zoom festivities in a way, or driving through the parking lot of a Catholic church, you know. So it was like really they had drive. There's drive through confessions in some places.
That's funny. Yeah. It's nice to see people trying to adapt. You know, especially when they're doing it in safe ways. And I think any healthy coping skills and coping mechanisms that are there for people that we can keep in place safely through the pandemic is key.
Yeah, so. For sure. Well, let's wrap this one up. I appreciate everyone listening to this one. This was a quick one, but we'll be back next week with another one, with another possibly two-parter. We're going to see. We're working on it now.
Yes. Order of the Solar Temple. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Yeah. It's an interesting one for sure. And certainly another destructive cult that's still out there today. So as usual, people can find us at anchor.fm/cult-following. And this podcast is available on almost any place where you can listen to a podcast. So go out and find us on Apple or Spotify or whatever you use. Cult Following is also on Instagram and on Facebook. And you can find out more about me at metatomics.org and follow me on social media as well at metatomic_Todd on Instagram. And Metatomics is all over the place. It's on Twitter and it's on Facebook and it's on Instagram and Snapchat and all those sources. And what about you, Dr. Katie? Where can people find out more about you?
You can find me on my website at drkatiesays.com. You can also find me on a few different social media sites at Dr. Katie Says on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And if anything is added, we will let you know and I'll update you. But I hope to see some new faces. And until next time, keep following.
Yeah, we'll see you next time. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Metacortex Publishing hopes that you've enjoyed this presentation.
Please take a moment to listen to some other podcast offerings from Metacortex Publishing.
A quest is a search for something. And every week, the Quest podcast will show you how we know what we know through interviews with people that have incredible stories of dedication and perseverance. I'm your host, Todd Fisher. Join me in this thought-provoking and inspiring podcast of discovery. Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
everybody. I'm Amber Rose, the religious hippie, and I host the podcast A Catholic's Perspective. Join me every 2 weeks as I release episodes targeted towards helping young Catholics navigate their ever-changing secular world while staying strong in their faith. Whether you are a Catholic or not, all are welcome here. So if this is something that interests you, feel free to tune in. You can find A Catholic's Perspective on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I hope to see you there. Bye!
Hi, I'm Father Daniel DePlantis, a Catholic priest, martial artist, and host of the Karate Priest podcast. Have you ever wondered what the Church teaches about different topics? Are you a martial arts enthusiast or just someone who wants to learn more about martial arts? I'd like to invite you to join me and many guests on my podcast as we cover topics of faith, everyday living, and martial arts on the Karate Priest podcast.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please be sure to rate and review this episode. This podcast is produced by Todd Fisher and Anthony Smith and is distributed by Metacortex Publishing. This podcast is copyright. Any previously trademarked or copyright content is used by permission. Information and opinions stated in this podcast should not be construed as medical advice. Please be sure to visit the official website for Metacortex Publishing at metacortexpublishing.com or find us on social media for other unique content.